consider item 1602. Dr. Flores, you asked this to be removed from the consent agenda. Do you have questions? I understand there are people here to answer.
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. I'm starved.
Well, I was waiting until you have your mouth full. So it's way with time.
Yeah, okay. I know you're coming back to present on your on the zone.
Yes, not me personally, but DPS.
But you're coming.
DPS will come about that in June, most likely.
Okay. What I'm interested in is, again, some of those questions that I asked Aurora, like what is the nature of the zone? What is going to be, and why are you? What are the changes? I mean, what are the details? I guess when I said about, I want to see the DOLCH list for that. I want to see the curricula. Yeah, I want to see the details to know that these kids are going to learn. I know you come to the board and you talk about how you're going to deal with data, and it's data, 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 as if data is an explanation for teaching, and you know, I don't see that. I mean, I would be interested, and then I think I'm going on. If let's say the last group was to tell me, well, we're going to do, I'm going to collect so much data. The language arts teacher, the reading teacher, is going to take, you know, 3 points of data that I'm going to write down where they've learned this or they've learned to spell these words and detail like that, and not we're going to teach them about data and how to collect data. I think it gets down to we're going to teach this and then here's how we're going to see whether they've learned this. I guess I'd like you to talk to me at that level about these schools.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just want to clarify. The person that came from DPS is here because she thought you had questions about the replacement plans for the waivers that were included in the item that you pulled from consent this morning. That item does not include the approval of any new innovation plans. It just is a set of existing innovation schools previously wanted to make changes to the waivers that they have. So,
okay.
So all that's in there is just some additional waivers to try and align so that this, and as a district, they're trying to sort of just get a common set of those things in place. So this is a little bit more of a fine-tuning thing for them. And actually, that may also be the discussion when you see the innovation stuff that comes next month, because, again, those are also existing innovation schools whose plans have already been approved, who just are seeking changes to the set of waivers that they have. So
maybe
she's probably not prepared to answer questions.
Okay,
about the content of anyone's innovation plans, because that wasn't what was
so maybe you plan. I'm sorry to waste your time. Maybe you'd like to respond to why are you asking for set innovations or set
waivers
to innovations.
Sure. So the 8 schools that are in play today added waivers as part of their renewal process. We do a renewal process with all of our schools at least every 3 years. And over the course of the time in which they originally wrote their plan and was approved by this board, they found that they would like these additional waivers in order to best implement their plan and get outcomes for their students. And so as part of renewal, they added these waivers.
And what are these waivers for?
There's a memo actually in your board packet that provides highlights of this, but these are very common waivers, ones that are given frequently by this board for innovation schools, either in the categories of personnel, or academic programming, budgeting, or time. So there's nothing in this list. If you want, I can hand you the copy of, I happen to have a copy of the board things, but it's color-coded here to show just categorically what they're seeking. But there's nothing new or different than what you all have approved a lot of times.
Okay, and I don't think I mean, I read things, but I don't think
that's
I saw that.
Yours might not have been beautifully color-coded, so it might look a little
oh, good.
Yeah. Collegiate Prep Academy, yeah. Yeah.
So this is one of 8 schools.
That, I think, is a summary of
all 8. So there's College Prep for this next one. And it's kind of what part they're Okay, and the color coding, Brett, so blue means...
At the top is the color.
Here we go. Concerning academic programs, personnel.
I see. And so with personnel, what are you doing? Are you paying more money to them, or...
It's different for each school. They wrote different placement plans that I believe were with you as well. So you have the opportunity to look at that. Those replacement plans are on behalf of the staff at the school, the administration, and the CSC at the school, as well as vetted by DPS legal department, by my department, and by CDE staff.
And so let's take collegiate prep. Okay. You're going to be on a different schedule for paying teachers, so... What is that going to look like?
So I don't believe that is one of the waivers that they are seeking to add.
It's blue, and you said that blue was...
So blue is academic programming.
Okay.
So green is personnel.
Oh, good.
So local board.
So what is the new program that you're going to do for Collegiate Prep Academy? And I think that's one of the ones that's not doing well?
So... the innovation plan itself has many more details about the programming, and the narrative explains what they're doing. This is just a waiver to make extra clear kind of the what those pieces are for all the stakeholders involved. So I can walk you through, if I brought all the innovation plans, we could walk through kind of the more specific pieces for each of them. But they developed very strategic plans that are in the narrative section as opposed to the waiver section. To describe kind of the questions you're asking.
And most often, just as a reminder, those replacement plans will indicate, like for curriculum, for example, that the school is going to make some decisions about curriculum, not just follow the scope and sequence adopted by the district. So a lot of times, receiving a waiver just really means that delegating the authority for the decision-making about that area is given to the school rather than having followed the specific policies.
And you know, this is the whole problem. And I was for that. I was for that bill that Representative Dominic Moreno, and I know that you're not, well, most of these do look like they are charter schools. Are they charter?
No, they're not.
They're in innovation schools. And yet, you come to us for this change in innovation and that change in innovation, and I mean, I've seen this where it's thick with all these changes that are being asked. And yet we don't know what they are, and the public doesn't know. When we look at disclosure, I mean, really, what the public would really want is disclosure on all of these things that you're asking for here. I think we need disclosure on all of this stuff.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, just to clarify, the local school board has a really different responsibility than the State Board of Education on these plans. So when someone initially seeks to become an innovation school, it comes here, you all review the plan for the school as well as the replacement plans for the waivers, and you say yes or no. I'm sorry, I just mean yes and yes. I mean yes or no. whether this should become an innovation school. And then locally, they renew those plans with schools. So changes to program are really something that is vetted and approved by the local board. The only thing that this board makes changes to over time is if they want to make changes to the list of waivers to state law that they'd like to have because they believe it will enable them to better implement the program. So the Denver Public School Board approves renewal plans for these schools, and when they make programmatic changes, that board reviews and approves or does not approve if they want those changes. But that's not something that's done here at this board. That's really done at the local level. Here it's just a review of additional waivers to state law.
And that's what I'm asking. There's no review. I mean, we're just talking words back and forth, and I ask questions, and you go, and well, it's here, and it's more in a narrative form. Well, I didn't see the narrative form, and this wasn't even in my packet. So, to me, this is all new. So when it was stated and you read it, I said, sure, let me ask about that, because you know, here we're approving things, and I don't know what we're approving.
Dr. Flores, would you like to make a motion to lay this over until the June meeting?
I would.
There's a motion to lay this over until the June meeting. Well, is there a second?
Would that cause problems? Yeah.
Well, then that would, wouldn't that come together then?
Yes. Please join us.
Gregory Hatcher, Government Affairs for Denver Public Schools.
Thank you, Dr. Flores. I think, you know, we prefer that we not lay over till June, just because schools are continuing to, as they prepare for next school year, have work that they need to do with the new plans that are before you. And again, I think one of the things that I think Angie and Gretchen tried to explain as well is that these, the application or what you're reviewing now is a change, just small changes to the innovation plan that this board has already approved. And so our hope is that these small changes can be put in place given what leaders have been doing over the last 3 years of this innovation and the innovation plans that they've had to correct some things that they've seen that they feel like is best for their community and for their school community. And so we prefer not to wait till June, Mr. Chair, if possible. And we can follow up, our team can follow up with you directly, Dr. Flores,
okay,
at a later date to talk through the specifics, sure, of the innovation plan, if you'd like.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Just wanted to note the innovation plans are online, including the waivers that are requested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And next to your question, Dr. Flores, just around the disclosure piece, so the community has complete access to every innovation plan, both that they could go into the school and ask for such plan, the principal can give it to them, or they could go online to our board docs as well to access that.
Sure, and I'm sure I'll be just like one of your public.
I think one of the easiest things maybe we should do in the future, maybe it's not too late to do now, is they're asking us to waive what? In plain English, they want us to waive.
Exactly.
These five things. What are the five things?
So the memo that I gave Dr. Flores is an overview of that, but in your binder is the full list of this is the statute they're trying to waive.
Yeah.
This is the replacement.
It's not
plan.
In mine.
Let's skip. I mean, I'm not as interested in the replacement plan as I am as a plain English, in 10 words, what is it they want to waive?
Again, different schools are asking to waive different things. Some of the what things they're waiving are related to the definition of the academic year, noting that they work on different calendars and wanted to be extra clear about the fact that they work on those extra calendars. Another set of them are around the employment authorities of principals, basically saying that our principals get to be the primary deciders of their the employment of the people at the school. They have advancement decisions, things like that. I'm happy they look more detailed.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Any further questions? Is there a motion on this question? Yes.
I don't have. Okay. Val, do you have it?
No. I move.
Yes.
Move to approve the waiver.
Ms. Masnick.
Second.
Ms. Masnick moves to approve 1602, the request for waiver from Durham Public Schools for additional waivers on behalf of Colgate Academy, Compassion Road Academy, DIS Ford, Denver Montessori, Martin Luther Kimberly College, Summit Academy, Valdez, and Whittier K-8, pursuant to section 22-32.5-107, paren 3, paren A, Colorado Revised Statute.
That was what you said, huh?
Yeah.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. Is there objection to the adoption of that motion? Seeing none, that motion is declared adopted by votes of 7-0. We now are going to very quickly proceed out of order, I hope quickly, to item 18. 17.01, notice of rulemaking for the administration of healthy beverages.
Would you like a motion?
Please.
I move to approve the notice of rulemaking for the rules for the administration of the healthy beverages policy 1 CCR 301-79.
Is there a second? It's been moved to second. Ms. Rankin seconds. Please, Ms. M., go ahead.
Thank you. We are just going to give you very briefly an overview of this notice, and Bree Riley is our acting director of the Office of School Nutrition following the retirement of Jane Brand. So, Bree, what's that your name?
Go ahead.
Be quick. In 2009, rules were promulgated for healthy beverages sold in schools based on state statute. USDA caught up in 2013 and released an interim final rule. 3 years later, we are still working with an interim final rule based on federal guidelines. And we would like to reduce the regulatory burden and align these current rules, the federal rules, with our state rules. We have reduced the rules from 2.5 to 1.5 pages. We've aligned definitions and we've clarified language. At this time, we don't anticipate any controversy in regards to aligning the rules. We have reached out to school districts and over 30 organizations, such as LiveWell, Hunger Free Colorado, as well as universities across the state. So far, we've only received two comments. One was from a nutrition director, and they said that they aligned and they welcomed and needed the alignment. And then the second one was from LiveWell Colorado, a partner organization. They asked about including clarifying language regarding access to free water for students. However, these regulations are addressed in USDA rules and guidance memos, and we want to avoid duplicating federal regulations at this time in state rules. We are actually working with LiveWell Colorado to find other ways to work on other opportunities to clarify these regulations about the free water. We respectfully request to have these rules noticed, and the public hearing would occur in August. We thank you for your time and consideration.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Masnick.
So I'm unclear about the free water issue. Is LiveWell concerned that there should be free water available to students in schools?
Do we not
have drinking fountains anymore?
There are current federal regulations that there has to be free potable water available and unrestricted access to any child that is receiving NSLP meals, National School Lunch Program meals. So those are already USDA guidelines. So my conversation with LiveWell, they were thinking that we needed to clarify that access to free potable water. However, that's already clarified in memos and USDA regulations. So we didn't think that this was an opportunity to clarify that in state rules, since they are already covered in federal rules.
So when you say you're working with LiveWell, what are you working to make them understand that? Or
we actually are working with them and giving them some additional resources, because they do generally have a different audience than we do. They took the resources, and the next meeting was going to be at a healthy eating, active living community group, and they were going to bring those resources, explain the regulations a bit more, and find out if there are other opportunities where we need to clarify.
I'm just going to interrupt here. May I ask what resources we gave them?
We gave them USDA memos as well as PowerPoint slides that we have given out to our school districts across the state.
Did they allege in any instance that there is a specific example of free water not being available to any Colorado student?
They had mentioned that there was possibly some restrictions at certain schools, but they were not able to give me examples of the schools.
May I suggest, before we do anything else for these people, that if they have specific complaints and believe the federal law is being violated, they bring specific examples, and otherwise we move on? Yes, Ms. Rankin.
I just have, I read this whole thing, and I'd like to know where 2.02, regular school day, came from, that it is midnight, the night before the first day of class, to 30 minutes after the end of the last class period?
Federal regulations starts at midnight before, so in order to streamline it for districts, we were aligning state and federal definitions.
Thank you for doing that.
Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
We're going to have a hearing on this, and we hope that it's not a big issue, but we will be in Grand Junction. So I'm hoping that there's a way for anyone who wants to provide input from the Front Range, that we have the capacity. No, we're in Pueblo next month. This is August.
I thought we were doing this in June.
Didn't you say August?
August.
Yeah, 2 months.
That's Grand Junction.
You can come in July if you want to. I ain't going to be here. So could you make sure that there's some opportunity for, if somebody actually wants to speak at our hearing, that they can get on Skype or whatever it is that we do?
Absolutely.
Please?
Yes.
Because I'm a little nervous about having a meeting that far away from most of the state of Colorado.
I wonder if we could even postpone until September.
I don't think that's necessary. They can submit written comments, and we'd be happy to read brief comments, perhaps into the record. Might work as well, too.
Yeah.
They should, actually, we're going to have that anyway, that we may have some folks that want to comment.
Any other comments? I'll make one disclosure that I did ask for this rulemaking to be initiated. It was called to my attention that our rules were unduly burdensome and went well beyond the current federal regulations, which make it difficult for companies to do business in more than one state to be able to comply and conform. So I do hope that we are not exceeding the federal regulations. I've heard one and already heard one complaint that our hours are different than the federal regulations, so you might check in the comment period to make sure that we've got those issues squared away so that we don't have to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to reconcile those issues. Okay, further questions? So is there objection to the adoption of the motion for notice of rulemaking? No objection. Seeing no objection, that motion is adopted by a vote of 7-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Now we are at public comment. Ms. Birdsall.
What about board member reports go before public comment?
Not usually.
What about the people on the bullying?
Well, we laid that over till tomorrow.
Oh, we did?
I thought it was later today.
Yeah, well, that was the first layover. That was before we decided to spend 2 hours with Aurora.
Then the flight was canceled.
The later today is already here.
Yeah, so in fact, it's getting very later today. So
we're going to do board comments after.
We'll do board comments last, sure. Yeah.
That one, we'll discuss immunization.
And we have to discuss immunization in that. So. All right, we'll start with Anita Stapleton, Ms. Stapleton. And just remember, we have 3 minutes, and Ms. Burso will keep time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members, for your service to Colorado's education system. I am Anita Stapleton from Pueblo County. I submit today the real voice from Colorado parents, teachers, and taxpayers that want out of the federal control over education and Common Core. With the close of this legislative session, I am very concerned about the passage of HB 1222. The only positive is that the amendment that removes the mandates and opens up choice. However, with this being said, this bill is very dangerous, and I prefer a no vote. Until Executive Order 128666, written by President Obama and implemented January 3, 2002, which gutted the FERPA Act, until it is overturned, nullified, shut down, the floodgates of student data remain open. With the push of H.R. 4366, which is the Strengthening Education Through Research Act, CETRA, combined now with the passage of Every Student Succeeds Act, the federal government has complete control. Colorado passed a data privacy bill that, in my opinion, is weak. It reinforces the leftovers of FERPA in relation to transparency only. Am I grateful for some kind of action out of Colorado? Yes. But in my opinion, it is a pacifier. What I request of this board and the commissioner is that you read the U.S. Department of Education report, Expanding Evidence Approaches for Learning in a Digital World, February 2012. This document, which was submitted to you over a year ago, is in your hands. I urge you to reference it, read it, learn it. It has all the answers right there. A very short document. It explains the very importance of why non-cognitive data is important, why data alone is important, and where the U.S. Department of Education is going with it. These bills out of Congress enable the agenda of the United States Department of Education to drive the data grab. FERPA had to be gutted in order to make these bills effective. House Bill 1222 plays into the hands of ESA and CETRA. Digital learning curriculums omit parental and taxpayer oversight. Supplies great increase in the data collection without oversight. It complies with the U.S. Department of Education's National Curriculum Database, the Learning Registry, which you'll learn about in this document. Barmik Desarian of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities stated that research has become the easiest incantation by which virtually anyone could get direct access to this data. With the new FERPA regulations, as long as a redefined educational agency can collect and share without parental consent, as long as they claim to be doing research to improve instruction, administer student aid programs, or develop or validate or administer predictive tests. Great things are not going to come out of ESA. They're not going to come out of CETRA, and they're not going to come out of HB 1222. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stapleton. Emily Yerkes. Thank you, Ms. Yerkes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the State Board of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with you today. My name is Emily Yerkes. For over a decade, I have worked in public schools in Baltimore and Denver as a classroom teacher, instructional coach, and teacher evaluator. I am currently the language arts teacher leader at DCIS Montbello in Denver Public Schools. I am here to convey my concern about replacing disaggregated subgroups in school and district accountability systems with combined subgroups, sometimes referred to as a super subgroup, and what I perceive are the consequences of such action. Subgroup distinctions are necessary for accurately assessing student outcomes. Throughout my career, I have worked exclusively in schools where over 90% of students qualified for free lunch. Nearly 100% of students I have taught are Black, Latino, or multiracial. Over the past 5 years, I have worked for two schools in Northeast Denver with large numbers of English language learners and disproportionate numbers of students who qualify for special education services. In fact, some of my students qualify for inclusion in four of the current subgroups. This does not mean, however, that their needs and challenges are identical, nor that the same interventions will work for each of these groups. By combining distinct groups into one combined subgroup, I fear that these groups, all of which continue to be underserved in public education, will be further marginalized as the academic outcomes of particular populations will be obscured, leading to less emphasis on supporting the needs of specific groups and celebrating their success. As a teacher, I am not able to plan for the needs of all of my students using only one strategy, nor will the state and districts be able to support all students looking at data for only one combined subgroup. The use of combined subgroups in accountability appears to be prohibited by ESSA. An explanation of ESSA published by Education Week states that states are prohibited from combining different sets of students into so-called super subgroups for accountability purposes. Although there was such an allowance made under some No Child Left Behind waivers, it appears that this practice is no longer valid. Equity in educational opportunities and outcomes is an issue of great concern across the nation and here in Colorado. Electing to combine subgroups of disadvantaged students into one combined subgroup is a step in the wrong direction in ensuring that the students in our state are meeting, that the schools in our state are meeting the needs of all of our students. Regardless of the motivation to take such action, I urge you to strongly consider the real impact that will befall our most vulnerable children if we fail to recognize and value each distinct subgroup when assessing the academic achievement of our students. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board, for your time today.
Thank you. Emily Volker.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Emily Volker, and I am representing myself. I am an elementary literacy specialist with Denver Public Schools. I taught fifth grade in Nashville Public Schools and bilingual third grade in DPS. I'm pleased to be before the committee today in order to speak about my experience teaching with Colorado-specific standards. When I moved from Nashville to Denver in 2011, I had to redo almost everything to teach Colorado's academic standards. I quickly learned that Tennessee's old state standards were less rigorous than Colorado's, which made me question if the final grades I had just assigned to my students in Nashville would have met Colorado's expectations. The integration of the Common Core standards into Colorado's has further raised expectations for our students and teachers. With Common Core, our students are expected to go deeper in their knowledge of more focused standards. This improves students' mastery of the content and empowers students beyond superficial understanding. I'm concerned that recreating Colorado-specific standards would lead to lower expectations, possibly driven by a desire to look like we're doing well on tests rather than truly measuring knowledge and critical thinking. Maintaining the Common Core in our standards ensures that we are expecting as much from our students as from other states. At the beginning of Common Core in Colorado, we didn't know what a Common Core lesson was supposed to look like. We quickly learned that one of the main strengths of the Common Core is its implementation in many states across the nation. We connected with teachers across the country and got resources that show teachers, students, and parents what it looks like to successfully meet the standards. Our students, regardless of where they live, should all be prepared to meet the demands of the 21st century. This interstate collaboration ensures that if a student moves to another state, students and parents will not need a new definition of success. In addition, Common Core's wide adoption across the United States allows for easier global comparisons, so we can begin to gauge our academic progress as a nation. Student success, if measured only by Colorado-specific standards, is a narrow-minded view. I urge you to maintain the current Colorado academic standards that include the Common Core, because we will have a broader view of academic success, it will be easier to compare academic progress globally, and because these standards lead students and teachers to think deeply about content. These are the students that will be sitting in my seat and your seat in 20 years, as well as managing our pensions. We want these students to have a wide base of knowledge and skills that allow them to be successful within and beyond our borders to make our state proud. I thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board.
Okay, thank you. Terry Jones.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, good afternoon. My name is Terry Jones. I'm a math teacher at Fort Lupton Middle School, and I'm here representing myself. I'm also a Colorado Educator Voice Fellow and a National Teach Strong Ambassador. Additionally, I'm very honored to represent Colorado on the PARC Report Frameworks, setting the threshold scores for the math section of the PARC test. And this summer, I will be part of the team to examine bias or potential bias in any PARC questions. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today about Colorado's decisions concerning educational standards and testing under the new Every Student Succeeds Act legislation. Mr. Chair, members of the board, I submit that the state of Colorado's education system is on the verge of a renaissance. I make this statement because Colorado made the correct decision when we decided to use PARC as our state assessment. In addition to adopting the Common Core State Standard, adding our rigor to them to create the more rigorous Colorado academic standards. So far, we are staying the course, and this stability is what our educational system in Colorado desperately needs right now. We need to adhere to this decision and allow teachers and school systems time to better understand our framework and use the data to make future adjustments. In other words, Colorado made the correct decision. Now, we need to trust our educators to do what they do best, educate students against rigorous standards and collaborate. And trust me, we've got this. Our other option is to change, yet again, not only the measuring stick, but how we also measure. And this has not worked out well for states that chose this path. Indiana and Oklahoma changed their minds and bowing to political pressure, and now their educational framework is a disastrous state of affairs. Each state spent millions of dollars and countless hours only to end up with inefficient assessments because of the numerous glitches. And the standards are still not settled. Tennessee, another state that decided to design its own tests and standards, has created such a mess that it even had to cancel testing this year. Florida, my home state, decided to go it alone, and after millions of dollars, hard feelings, and countless hours, their standards and their testing is almost identical to PARC and our Colorado academic standards. PARC costs Colorado about $24 per student, and this is very reasonable given the option to spend millions in countless labor hours while creating enormous amounts of frustration developing another set of standards and assessments. Time is up. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Heather Thank you. Kennedy.
Okay, we signed up concurrently, but...
Please do.
They
can all
come up. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for having us. Thank you to the board.
for allowing us to come. This is part of the Children's Hospital Mental Health Youth Action Board, and we're a board that was created in 2013 by Children's Hospital as a three-pronged approach to engaging the community and our stakeholders in improving mental health and mental health services. So the Youth Action Board this year is made up of 13 youth ages 15 to 18 from Denver metro area schools. And since 2013, we've had about 26 plus a couple now, more this year, board members representing 18 schools across 8 school districts. So the YAB is facilitated by two adults, but the young people drive the campaigns every year. The goals of the Youth Action Board are to advise the department on projects and materials to improve our care, but also to raise the awareness of child and adolescent mental health issues in the community that we serve by creating a project every year that will support social change and to develop the leadership skills of young people across the Denver metro area. Each year, YAB members are offered a training called Youth Mental Health First Aid, and they plan and implement a large social action project related to mental health every year. And so we're here today to tell you a little bit about that action project. And Maeve will tell you a little bit more.
Hi, I'm Maeve Marley. I'm one of the youth co-leaders of the Mental Health Youth Action Board at Children's. And this year, for our outreach project, we wrote 6-word stories on anything and everything surrounding mental illness and the importance of mental health. So as a group, we wrote over 200 stories, and we picked 30 of them to be released by the hospital every day for the entire month of May, as May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So we launched a social media campaign encouraging other youth and people to share their mental health stories with the hashtag #MonuMentalHealth. We also created a large display board, which we will bring around with us to schools and other locations where we present, with an interactive presentation to encourage students and other people to write their own 6-word stories and share them and post them on the board, in order to encourage a conversation around mental health and normalizing conversations on mental illness, which are very important, especially to youth. So the reason we made this project, which is what Kristen will share, is...
Well, Lydia's going to go first.
It
describes kind of the flavor, which some of that is in your packet, is some examples of our project, but Lydia wanted to share one that she got to write.
Hi, so my name is Lydia, and I'm going to share my favorite 6-word story. And mine is, strength is a product of bravery, because I feel that in order to grow as a person, you have to step out of your comfort zone, and just, that's like a hard thing to do, and in order to do that, you have to, that's being brave, stepping out of your comfort zone, and that's how you become stronger.
So we just wanted to thank you guys. We know you're really busy and have lots to do. But we just want to let you know that mental health is so important to students. I'm from Chaparral High School, and in the past 4 years, we've had 5 students take their lives. So just mental health is so important, and that, like, I myself had gone through a couple mental illness issues, and I was so comfortable to come to my school counselor. So if, in the future, if someone comes and, like, wants mental health in health classes curriculum, just remember us and how important it is. So, yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That concludes public testimony for today. Thank you. We're now board member reports. No?
Immunization.
Well, then we'll do that in board member reports.
Okay.
So we'll start. I'll start with the immunization piece. I think for those that are interested, the board has agreed, and if we haven't agreed, we can talk about it, to ask the Attorney General to send a letter to school districts informing the school districts of their obligations under federal privacy laws and state privacy laws, and to ensure that appropriate opt-in, opt-out provisions are being met by school districts. If the Attorney General elects not to participate in that activity, the board will then send its own letter to school districts reminding them of their legal obligations under the law. And so we'll work through this process And Dr. Scheffel has a comment.
And can you make sure that we get a clear copy of whatever?
Yeah.
Because we can send it directly to parents. Or just
right. And if I think if we determine that the what the Attorney General does is inadequate, we'll do our own, and then we'll Mr. Dill will craft something for us. So I guess maybe that's some incentive for the Attorney General to do something so we don't do something worse. Good. Now, you want to start, Ms. Masnick, board member reports?
I don't think I have anything.
Okay. Ms. Rankin?
I went down to Pueblo, I think it was this last month, and spent a day and went to the school board meeting at night and just learned a little more about the schools and the school district that I work with down there. And I also went to the Western Slope Superintendent's meeting, and Angelica was there too. We were there for a couple days. And this Friday, I'll spend the day at Mesa School District 51. The superintendent there wanted to take me to a graduation ceremony, and I also will tour some of the schools, and one particularly successful in blended learning, which I'm looking forward to. And I think that's pretty much it for last month.
Thank you, Ms. Rankin. Yes, Ms. Gall?
I don't know what's part of the month to start at whenever I do these kinds of things. Since the last board meeting, I've doing some community, a little bit, somewhat different type of the community involvement and visiting Commerce City, which is primarily centric to Adams 14 District, has set up a series of community events or meetings, social but not necessarily only, more of a expose for their community about things like job opportunities and yet for the younger set, more of the career fair thrust on it. But it's been delightful to get to know a little bit more of Commerce City through their municipal officials and elected types as well as their school district personnel. So I've done a couple of those. Did accompany the commissioner to an Adams 14 community after school, kind of his own type of town hall or listening tour, but it was a good chance for the commissioner to talk about the overall Colorado view that he has, and we both spent some time with the people there. I also have had gone to Adams, what used to be called Adams 50 School District, to be aware that there is now a Westminster Public Schools. Adams 50 has changed its name, and their community foundation breakfast was a couple of weeks ago, and there was a great attendance. And they're growing. That event's growing quite a bit. The district's growing. That is our standards-based, competency-based school district. It is the only one in the state, and they've been at it quite a while, so it's going to be some place to follow as we all move through the competency-based development. And those are the three school highlights. I think we've all had a month of our other life. we could tell tales about, I'm sure. But it's been a good month. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yes, Dr. Short.
A number of us attended the PEBC luncheon last month. However, not all of us could wait for the presentation by Tim Hodges from Gallup. I really think that that's a very important concept, and what they're looking at in their education community is the significance of hope and engagement in learning. And I think their argument is that if you don't have hope, there's a real worry whether the system can really be helpful. They have an assessment that's free that schools can have their students take in order to get a sense for overall their communities, their students' hope and their level of engagement. I think this is something we could be looking at as we look at educator evaluation metrics, accountability metrics, et cetera, to see what sort of a culture that our students are living in and whether they really are hopeful, that what they're doing has merit. I enjoyed the visit to the Western Slope Superintendents Conference. It was very different than I expected. I think I was in a group of leaders who have a lot of hope. That's the most positive. I mean, we hear a lot of negative stuff from the superintendents, and I didn't hear any of it there. They just kind of roll up their sleeves. They do have a little bit more flexibility in how they address their challenges. They do it differently. They're very interested in learning more about ESSA, as we all are. There was a conversation about their critical need for more teachers, but they have some ideas that I hope we can support. I think the PEBC system is helping, but they want that ratcheted up in a bigger way. So I think that's a conversation that we ought to have. What I heard from them was, don't import teachers from somewhere else. We need to grow our own, because they're the only ones that are going to stay. And I think that's an important conversation we should include. For the Front Range, that's a different need, but out on the plains or up on the Western Slope, we have to really look at how we can fulfill that need differently. They were great conversations. I attended last Tuesday and Wednesday the Reinventing American Schools program that was put on by A+, as well as the Progressive Policy Institute, I think that's what it's called. I visited a couple of schools in DPS. Basically, the program was about the changes or the programs in Denver and the way they look systematically at their schools. And I shared with you the study that was basically presented. And it's very helpful. And the lessons they're learning is that innovation in and of itself isn't really, and the results have been no different than their regular schools. So I looked at it from the lens of facing the turnaround issues, but they're looking at it just as a comprehensive look at their schools, what's working, what's not working, what are some changes that they want to make as a system. But it's a very global, systematic look. Their board is asking some really hard questions, and I found it pretty much fascinating. Finally, we did get our concurrent enrollment. Well, actually, I haven't read the report. It's kind of long, and I didn't want to print it out, but I've read some of the summaries. But I was reminded of that when I was in the Vail area this weekend and read the Vail Daily. The lead article was about the graduation from Colorado Mountain College. But what I enjoyed was the fact that 13 of those graduates are actually high school kids who have earned a two-year degree already. It pleases me that in the mountains, where we don't even have these huge communities, we are still finding a way, or at least Eagle County is finding a way, to provide those opportunities for kids. It was a very positive thing.
And do you have districts that are out there?
Pam and I share. Pam, I'm sorry, no.
The other
Joyce and I. Joyce and I share Eagle County.
Oh.
And I represent Summit, which is Western Slope. And I represent East Grand and West Grand. So I'd never gone before. I think if I ever attended the superintendent's meeting in Denver, I would go out in four pieces, because I don't think they really want us to attend. It's their opportunity to talk about us as opposed to work with us. But the approach in the Western Slope was just completely different. It was a very collegial.
Nice.
Angelica, yeah. I have to share that CMC is next door to the high school. It makes it a little easier.
It probably does make it a little easier. But, you know, in...
That way in Steamboat Springs, too.
Yeah. I mean, still, the fact that they're
right.
Getting that far. And that was only 13 kids who have associate degrees. A ton of their students are taking classes. And there are more than one high school in Eagle as well. Mm-hmm. So there's one school that's next door, but there are more schools than that. I think Eagle County really
Eagle's
rocks.
Quite progressive.
Yeah, they really rock.
Dr. Schiff.
I've really just been continuing to speak to groups and meet with constituents regarding continuing relevant issues. Online education and data privacy, because of the way they're linked, remain big issues for the folks that I'm talking to. And then I'd love to have a session on this at some point where we could look at the documents driving this, you know, incentives not to use textbooks, incentives to increase screen time, or big issues for parents. and for educators. And so the question is, over time, will the public have a choice as to how education is delivered? We know the data privacy bill is a step in the right direction, but it did not address algorithms that are inside of personalized learning approaches. Parents have concerns about that. So I've just been really just speaking and listening. And these issues continue to surface, and I'd like us to look at the documents that are driving it, because they come from the federal, even international levels, and also, of course, the state level.
Dr. Flores?
I attended several education legislative meetings on dealing with some of the issues that some of the bills that they were trying to pass. I also attended the PBC meeting, and yes, this gentleman talked about hope, but he said he had little hope when nobody wants to teach. He said that he spoke about small data as opposed to big data, and he talked about reform as being bleak. So, you know, and here we are in all this reform area, and this guy really spoke against all the things, almost all the things that we're kind of doing. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, you would bring someone like that who could speak so candidly about the issues that we are purporting to support, and yet he spoke against that. Two, I spoke with Tom Hefty, who is a board member. Well, he's on several boards, including Blue Cross Blue Shield. He's a friend of mine, and I didn't know Tom Hefty. This friend introduced me to him, and Tom Hefty used to be the person in Wisconsin. Actually, he's in Wisconsin, but he now lives part-time here because of his grandchildren. In Wisconsin, Tom Hefty used to have the position of being the person responsible for learning about and bringing in federal funds to the state. He told me this dreary story. I mean, I didn't know that we were 49th in 50 states as far as bringing in monies into.
We're not.
Well, he said we were 49th. Okay, and he. And, well, I don't know. He said that one of the things that we didn't do was. And we could bring in more money if we did some very unsexy things, like just fill out forms so that we could, you know, get this money. I took him over to speak with Pat, and he and Pat, and the following day, Tom called me and, you know, thanked me for meeting with him. And apparently the governor's person who is responsible for this, you know, talked with him, but he said, we need to fill those forms that, and we could, you know, get more money, especially with teachers, that there was money floating out there, and we were not getting it. I also went to a civil rights forum, which is planning with nonprofits on ESSA, to invite you to the, I bet you've already gotten a letter from them, to invite you to speak with them, and they're here in Denver, a lot of nonprofits. You know, that's one of the things that kind of concerns me about, well, it concerns me in that we're inviting nonprofits, and that's great because, you know, they do stand behind a lot of people. But don't we have, doesn't the state, when we have this public meeting, shouldn't the state have somewhere and announce just anybody who, and I don't mean anybody like anybody, but people, just in general, who may not be part of a nonprofit, but who just want to come and speak about and learn about ESSA and speak about what they, how they think this money should be spent. I mean, nonprofits are very important, I know, but I also think that just the general public. Here we are. We kind of went down on. What is that district that came before us? And we said, well, there are certain rules you have to follow about where you publish this information about general meetings. Well, you know, maybe that's something we need to do. We need to kind of do the same thing where people know to go. Maybe they don't know to go to the State Board of Education or to the Department of Education to find out rules about these meetings that take place. But I think the general public has a right to know when these meetings take place, and not just nonprofits. Not that they're not important. And I think if they're doing a meeting and you're invited to this meeting, maybe that's a way to get, you know, maybe we'll get three or four people to come in that are just general public people who want to come and speak. That's the end of my presentation.
Yes, Ms. Goff?
Along with that, I do agree. I think eventually there's some way we, at least here in our little immediate circles, if we could know who's doing some of this informational stuff.
Specifically the ESSA?
Yeah.
I have a meeting a week from Thursday with several groups to ask them that question.
Yeah. I think it's worth trying to get our own sense of organization about it. You know, I got some great stuff from I think we all share CCSSO information once in a while. I'm getting great stuff from NASB right now. It's pretty balanced. It's, you know, one topic or another, it's all shareable, but it's I'm getting a little bit, not nervous, just sitting a little frustrated by wondering who's saying what and how confused are people going to get by that.
That was a great point, because everybody is speculating like crazy, from PTA to unions to CCS. Yeah. So everybody are speculating on what the rules will look like when they come out for comment.
Right.
And they're all kind of putting their comments out, and nobody knows for sure. So it is, there's 50 different conferences being held on what's coming with ESSA. It's like, how do you know that?
Well, it's hard for anybody to keep track of, so what has been decided? Or where is this nothing plan, yet. And what parts have already been plugged into it? And we haven't really done anything yet. That's my two cents.
Okay. I think that brings us to the end. I spent most of the month over across the street.
Sure.
Only got yelled at twice by legislators on CDE business. One was that some reason I was accused of hijacking the School Finance Act, which is I wish I had, but had to plead not guilty to that. And then the other was for a position the board had taken in opposition to a bill, and after checking, we had taking the position of monitoring the bill, so.
Which bill was that? Are they not getting our information, do you feel? Because remember, I brought this up earlier.
I think by and large, there are 100 of them you have to keep in mind, so not all of them read everything that they're sent.
But they'll say something about it anyway.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's normal modus
they
operandi.
Just know how we are.
Yeah. So at any rate, other than those two incidents, time over there was fun. And
you're getting paid.
Yeah, I am getting, that's right, but not for this. So at any rate, thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow. And I do have one thing. Could we get tomorrow maybe a quick rundown on kind of how the first listening tours went?
You've got there's a presentation on it.
Oh, tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay, good.
And it's well done.
Oh, God.
That's
just
stuff we're carrying over.
I know.
They're actually excited to share with you.
Mine's all in one thing. So.
Yeah.
They are. They're excited to share.
Okay, good. So we're going to carry over those two items for tomorrow. And why don't we just do a redraft of the agenda and put them on last?
Yes. So you think that would be good?
They know their stuff.
That's
probably the one I'm going to.
Okay. Okay. Can you just kind of refocus the agenda then? All right, great. Any other questions or comments? If not, we'll stand and adjourn until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Thank you.